Blog Talk Radio.
Competition. Baruch Hashem, blesses our Creator. Welcome to Soul Talk. This is Soul Talk 785, Proverbs teaching to access wisdom and righteousness. And our intention to stay configured to the Almighty, to the eternal Torah, the oral and traditions of Israel. Blesses our Creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family condition. With Creator's help, our broadcast is taking place right now on January 15, 2023. It's 11:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, equals a.k.a. the USA, equals Unified Soul Actualization. The central topic for discussion will be today. We'll be sharing the oral, written and oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh, Torah, Prophets, Holy Writings, and we've got a whole lot more. Our call-in number is 563-999-3688 if you want to make the program a little bit more organic and improvisational. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. Tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Children of Israel, Collaborate with the Children of Noah, who hatred, jealousy, and competition not needed within this blessed earth, the Torah of Israel written in oral tradition, Gate of Trust, Gate of Unification, Gates of Repentance. We're going to segue down the music to the song Peace, a song we played many times on previous presentations by Ari Lesser, Always Give Us More, Not Less, And let's just turn down the music, and we'll turn to our co-hosts as well that we brought into the show. All right, blessed souls. We have joining us today, after a little bit period of saturation, and part of it is due to the fact that my mother, unfortunately, and I'm dedicating today's program to the refuah shlema, the healing of my mother, Yiska Bas Chaya Sara, who had a cardiac event a little before Thanksgiving this early fall, or late fall, I might say. And I've been spending my Sundays going to visit her. We did a program last week. Rob Walker, who's on the program today, not just a good dude, an excellent dude from Brooklyn, is on the program. He's going to be reading from his child's award-winning book. I think it's called What Mama Says, or What Mama Say. And also we have Rambam teacher, student, and activist for the dissemination of teaching of the Nefesh Gadol, the great eagle, Dennis Ryan. So Dennis, you're a little older than us. For to you, a good morning, Slava Boga, praise God.
Good morning, Don. Good morning, audience. How are you doing today?
Good morning, everybody.
Okay.
Yes.
Gentlemen, before we go into the deeper into the program, something I want to talk with Rob about, because Rob, I was thinking this morning after my prayers that since I live off of Utica Avenue in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn, and you grew up around that area, you probably can walk up and down Utica Avenue blindfolded and know where you are. And within the last 2+ weeks, unfortunately, 2 people were hit and killed. And killed. I'm not saying intentionally. They were a 67-year-old woman and a 10-year-old boy. In fact, one of the places still is like a collection of candles in memoriam to them. And, maybe you can give us a little prayer and a little insight and some advice, and we'll turn to Dennis as well, how people have to be more careful not just walking in the streets but when they're driving as well. Your take on, growing up in Crown Heights, and do you ever recall incidents like this with people getting hit and killed on Utica Avenue?
Well, good morning, everybody. Well, first of all, my condolences to the families of those lost in these two horrific accidents. It's unconscionable to think at the top of a new year that family members would be gathered together after celebrating you know, their holidays and their festivities to be mourning and laying to rest two of their loved ones, one of which, as you mentioned, is 10 years old, and the other being 67, both very, very beautiful and pivotal ages. As you said, yes, I did grow up in Crown Heights, initially on Utica and President Street, and then I migrated further down the street to Park Place in Utica, where I, at the age of five, I grew up there. My grandmother and grandfather owned a house. The house is still there to this day. My mother lives in the same neck of the woods on Utica and Park. And so I'm familiar with it from, you know, I'm born in 69, so, you know, a child of the 70s, coming in that community. And it was a much different neighborhood in many respects. We had, you know, we had block associations, we had neighborhood watch, we had block parties, you know. And it, I mean, not that there weren't things happening, but I think by and large, the community was a family. Everyone pretty much knew who each other was. If I did something, someone would spot me. They could tell my, oh, I know your grandmother, I know your mother, I'm going to tell your, you know, your parent, whoever. And, you know, it was like a neighborhood love and community village type of thing. Almost like a little policing at the same time. As it pertains to what happened with the traffic accident, I, you know, to be perfectly honest, I mean, this is not something that I remember happening much growing up. I mean, there were other things happening. I mean, but in terms of people driving recklessly and hitting people frequently, no, I don't recall much of that happening. One of the, obviously the most well-known occurrences is when Gavin Cato was killed during Crown Heights on President and Utica. And interestingly enough, the building that he was killed in and the building that, you know, was hit, I grew up in that building. That was the building that I was in when I was 5 years old and from the age of birth through five. So, and that was what sparked the Crown Heights riot during that time, and we know the story of that. So, I mean, that was the most popular, you know, occurrence of automobile, of, you know, vehicular homicide, if you will. But just to the point, people are just, to be honest with you, Don, I mean, they're really not paying attention. There are people that are driving without licenses, without insurance, people that are driving cars that are not really their cars. And, you know, these things are not something that seem to be important. I don't know if it's to our system in New York City. There seems to be more cars ticketed and towed for traffic violations, meaning, you know, alternate side of the street parking or no standing. Right. They pay more attention to those things than they pay attention to those who are driving, you know, beyond the speed limit and in school zones and areas where, you know, highly, you know, live by elderly people and children. So, you know, I think that this is more of a political issue that needs to be addressed by the mayor and the city council, that we would put things in place and penalties in place for people that are not obeying these laws. I mean, because obviously it costs two people their lives, but I know this is not the first two. And I listen to reports of people in, you know, on King's Highway and other places where people are just, it's like an open speedway coming down King's Highway. So we have to address these things. But that's my take on it. It's very sad, but we need policies in place that people will be held accountable if they do these things, so that it would cut down on the likelihood that it would happen, hopefully. And that's really about it, man. My prayers to the family. God, I would ask that you would bless and console the family of these two individuals, that you would bless and give them courage and strength during this time, God, that you would bless the community that came out to support them, all those who laid candles, God, all those who are mourning the loss of these individuals, that they would have peace and feel safe in their community, God, and that they would have a sense of resolution, that the city would do something to protect them, God, and oversee these things in a really proficient way. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Dennis, now you're a veteran of more full moons than you've seen times come and times go. I'm sure you can remember a time when traffic was not as precarious as it is in New York City. I mean, one of the things that I noticed when I was recently out in Chicago for six days is that drivers, when there's certain points on the road, they will actually stop and wait for the pedestrian to cross. Now, I'm not saying, you know, I think part of it also could be that people are driving and they're texting or they're talking on their cell phone. And I myself recently took a course. One of my job responsibilities is to train employees to drive safely. And I myself took a course how to drive more safely. And actually, I have found that it has actually increased my acuity in driving safely. And I just want to give a safety tip, and then I'll let Dennis, like you chime in on this, is that a safety precaution is when you're driving, keep one hand at 2 o'clock, you know, according to what 2 is located on a clock, and 10 o'clock, and always have 2 hands on the wheel. And my only precautionary measure that I do is that my eyes are like ping pong balls or tennis balls swinging from side to side almost constantly. And just one other tip, when I'm driving 30 miles an hour, I make sure that the car in front of me is at least 30 feet in front of me. Now, it's hard to do that on streets, especially in the crowded streets of Kings County, Brooklyn, but I have found that this has been a great help. And Dennis, I'm sure, you know, in your day, you probably remember, do you remember the cable cars? Because in Crown Heights, there was also, and I don't mean to be overly tangential, there used to be one of the main arteries of Crown Heights is Kingston Avenue. There used to be a trolley car that ran on Kingston Avenue, and then when someone was killed, they shut that down, and then they just turned it into a road for driving and for pedestrians across. So that's a little your foresight or your insight, historical overview of what you've seen in traffic in New York City the last 50, 60 years.
Well, the one thing is that accidents can happen anytime to anybody, anywhere. You cannot avoid an accident unless you're paying attention.
Is one of you on speakerphone? Or has the radio on? I'm getting feedback.
Was it disturbing?
Yeah, it's because I think when it's recorded in the archive, it's going to catch that. So if you can just go off speaker, please, Rob.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that.
Dennis, I'm sorry, Dennis. Please continue.
Well, when I was a kid, the one thing they always taught us was if you're going to cross the street, you better look at both ways of the street. You must pay attention to your environment. That doesn't mean the accident is not going to happen. But if you let your guard down and you're not wary that you can be injured by not paying attention, it's going to happen. Accidents happen everywhere all the time. They're unpredictable. Are they part of God's plan? Well, we'll discuss that at some time. But we must be aware of our environment. If you don't pay attention, pay for it.
Very nice.
But we really want people to understand what is going on, not only to the people who are pedestrians, but also the people who are driving. We must be aware of our fellow man. We can't make believe because we're driving some type of vehicle that everybody will get out of the way. It doesn't work that way.
Dennis, let me ask, if you can go back 55, 60 years ago, maybe a little, do you remember drivers being a little more, you know, civil than, say, today's drivers?
Well, what happened was, I remember the trolleys there down in Brooklyn. Matter of fact, I went to high school there. And those trolleys were, you had overhead lines, but you could see the trolley tracks in the street. So that made you even more aware of what was going on. So, and the trolleys would ring their bell and you could hear them. But there's always the chance of an accident happening. And that happens when you are not alert. If you think you can walk anywhere and you don't have to worry about an accident, you are mistaken. It will happen. Unfortunately, we are not perfect people, and accidents happen all the time.
Yep. This involves blessed souls out there. And by the way, I just want to point out to Dennis and Rob and Rob and Dennis and all you listening live or eventually hear the archive version, that in terms of where we're broadcasting to, we're still covering a little bit more than 50% of the land masses around the world. The United States is still pulling in almost 53% of our listenership. Canada is a steady second. Russia stays a steady third, which I'm still trying to comprehend you know, I guess there's enough people that understand the English to tune in. And, of course, Jamaica, which I'm always happy to see them in the top four, top five, and the United Kingdom followed at almost 3%. Gentlemen, what we've been talking about is that there's a need to make changes. And changes start, and you know, Rob mentioned something about political changes. I agree, there need to be. But changes have to start with oneself before anything else. The Chafetz Chaim, who was a great scholar who lived right until about 1931, 1933, he said as a young man, he had the ambition to change the world. So he got a little older, he said, well, maybe I'll change my country. He got a little older, a little wiser. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll change the county that I lived in. As you get close to the day of, you know, going to the next level of life, people would say, you know, passing from this world. He said, hopefully, and he lived about 90 years, 90 plus years. He said, hopefully I've changed something within myself. So with that being said, I'd like to share something. This was a request was asked of the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe. How should I go about correcting my emotional attributes? So I'm going to read a little snippet of this, which was from a letter that the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe penned. I'd like to get feedback from Rob and Dennis. So the Rebbe responded that the first step is to make an honest assessment of oneself without exaggerating to either extreme. This skill, he explained, can be learned from the way a craftsman repairs a broken object. We still have them out there, blessed souls. We're still not a completely throwaway society yet. So the craftsman begins to check the matter which needs to be fixed. Some of its parts need cleaning and strengthening. Some must be replaced. He then prepares his tools and begins to work. First, he removes the parts that are to be replaced, then busies himself with the cleaning and strengthening of the other parts. Finally, he shaped the new parts, gradually creating a strong and solid product. Similarly, with regard to the service of correcting one's emotional attributes, which can be distorted because of life circumstances or not a proper education, a person making bad choices, he or she, that is, a person should try to remove the negative traits and replace them with good ones. He must first analyze himself or herself well, ridding himself or herself of any undesirable traits, and then cleaning and strengthening those that are good. And then he goes on to say, you know, there are many teachings about this. We have from the Torah, and I'm sure other movements. I mean, I remember a while back reading how George Washington, at the age of 16, you know, we're going back to the 18th century, wrote a book about some sort of character improvement. So character improvement, I think, is part of ancient human tradition. Dennis, are people... What's the impediment for people to making an honest assessment of oneself in terms of not exaggerating their good points or their bad points in order to rectify that which needs rectifying?
Well, Maimonides was famous for saying you must control your emotions, because people get into all sorts of problems on an emotional basis, when in effect they should be doing it on a standard factual basis, and that is, Are you too emotional? You don't show emotion? Or what? Are you dealing with other people who become emotional and you fall in line? Or do you have certain standards that you're going to follow? So to do this assessment is to take away all those variables that can come and go with your emotions. You must be able to control your emotions if you want to live a straight and narrow life. That affects you and other people. The hardest thing to do is to sell change or tell people they must change, because they say, why should I change? I think I'm doing okay. Well, that's why you need the assessment. And the assessment will say, are you really doing okay? What are your faults? You're not perfect. No one has ever been perfect. But we must be able to understand your position in society. And that position is very important, because it affects other people as well as you.
Thank you, Dennis. Rob, I mean, we've talked about your upbringing with your mother and the heroic effort she put mm-hmm. in, invested in you. I get the feeling that she was very much an influence on your character development, and how you're also an influence on others on their character development. Can you talk about why people are sort of hesitant to make that honest assessment of themselves?
Well, I mean, when you look in the mirror in the morning, the first thing you see is a horrible,
characterization of the person that, you know, physically, that will look nicer within the next hour. Say when you wake up in the morning, your face is a little bit puffy, you've been sleeping all night, a little bit, you see the bags and the circles, you see the log in the eye, right? It's the truth. After you wash your face and you brush your teeth, you look a little better, but it takes a little while for you to come to yourself, see a couple, you know, to work with that. Being honest with oneself means realizing and recognizing, as Dennis pointed out, that you are not perfect. And there are some people who are hell-bent on believing that they are, you know, head and shoulders above everyone else because they have some things in place other people might not have. It also means that you have work to do when you recognize the truth about yourself. And some people are not willing to do the work. And because the work is an arduous task, and it may take longer than a month, 2 months. It may take 12 months. It may take 24 months. It may be the rest of your life. Maybe it's not something that will ever be fixed, but if you're working on it, then there's a chance that it can be rectified. Then there are people who don't realize that there is even anything to fix. Growing up with my mom, you know, she's very tough, strict, but she was to the point, and I can't say to anyone that I didn't know, you know. She told me what it was, what it could be, what it might be. I mean, nothing definitive. That was these were her experiences. She says, if you do this, this may happen. If you don't do this, this may not happen, or whatever it might be. So she can't say that my life has been a mirror of hers, but I do know that much of what she taught me did really help me to navigate through several problems that I might have been, you know, trapped, I might have been ensnared in. So people have a hard time because they're just not willing to be honest with themselves. They're not really honest with themselves. And also, for those who claim to be religious or love God, there is no faith and then there is no trust. One of the things that I remember in the Bible is when Jesus was on the boat and, you know, it seemed to be capsizing with the storm and the servants came and said, you know, Master, do you not care we perish? And Jesus said to them, oh, ye of little faith. You, after all you see me do, you still don't believe that, you know, this is just another test. People don't really want to go through the test. They don't really believe that things can change. They believe it in theory. They believe it when they hear it. They believe it on the television show. They believe it for someone else, but not for themselves. And it's a process. There's a process. It may mean shedding people from your life. It may mean not doing the things that you enjoy doing anymore to become the better version of yourself. And some people are not willing to give up alcohol or whatever, you know, drinking, hanging out, certain set of friends that do not reflect what you need to become. And when you become comfortable, you become calcified. You become calcified. And it's many layers. So last point before we move on will be the equivalent of someone being born, being taught something from the age of one or birth to 20 years old. And then you want to remove that and teach them something new. But now you have 20 layers of teaching that you have to remove and replace with something else. Now, how difficult would that be? Very difficult. So it's not an easy thing to do. And I think the work and the honest truth about what it takes to make it happen is why people shy, to be honest.
Right. I think also I just want to, you know, share my two cents. That I think some people are afraid of change because they're afraid that no change will take place. And it's kind of like akin to like, you know, a gold mine was found and a certain small amount of gold was found. So the expectation is, wow, we're going to find a lot more gold. But, you know, the first discovery of those, you know, little teeny tiny nuggets of gold could actually take an exponential amount of effort to uncover the larger hidden treasure that needs to be, taken out of the earth. And I think that's where people kind of get tripped up. Like they make a little bit of headway in their emotional development, and then they kind of run into this cycling pattern where they feel like they're a jerk kid spinning their wheels. But actually, you know, I mean, no one complains when they do their set of 10 push-ups every morning, and then 2 weeks later they can do 11 push-ups. It's the same 10 push-ups you did today and tomorrow and the next day. But 2 weeks later, lo and behold, the 11th push-up, and then in 6 months from now, it could be 50 push-ups. So I think that there's a frustration, and it could be even more embellished, gentlemen. I'd like to get your feedback on this, Dennis and Rob, that maybe because our generation now has been so pampered with instant gratification via high-tech, you know, means, is that we're expecting instant results. And I wanted to just share something that I heard the other day, and actually the director of where I work, you know, expressed his concern as well, is that now AI is, you know, artificial intelligence has reached the level where I can type in a subject matter, and I can produce a paper that will mamish give me the best grade that ever, and my grade. And then there's a professor, I think Neil Dyson. He's maybe an astrophysicist, and so he tweeted about 9 years ago. He saw this coming. He said the problem is the schools are more concerned about the students get good grades and the students are interested in learning. And if young people who are like fresh paper, are not willing to immerse their minds in different types of thoughts that they agree with, thoughts that they don't agree with, you know, we're going to have a generation. I hate to use these words. A lot of people become stupefied. And I've seen also people in their 20s and late 20s, I don't see the writing skills that I saw in people who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. And, you know, of course, there are always exceptions to the rules. So, Dennis, you know, what can we do to encourage people, take your time if you want to make change in your life? It's not just pressing a button or doing a printout or sending a text message that's going to change your emotional expansion.
Well, this is analogous to jumping into a swimming pool. You better check the level of the water before you jump into the swimming pool. And that is, all change is not necessarily good, but there's a certain amount of fear that humans have in change. And that is, will I be better if I change, or will I be worse? Now, you must have faith and belief in that you're doing a positive change. So how can you figure out if you're doing a positive or a negative change? You better read about it. You better ask people. You better understand. Why? Because if you do good change, good things will happen. If you do a bad change, you don't need that. So there is a fear factor of change in the human mind. And that is, why should I change? I'm happy the way I am. But that's why you need an assessment as to where you are, where you're going, and what do you stand for. And you must measure it against other people and other actions that you are responsible for.
Now, from your initial reaction, Rob, you sound like you have this is something that hits you in the core, and you're aware of that statement by Professor or Dr. Dyson. Astrophysicist. So I'd like your input on this matter and how, you know, the young generation think it's, you know, gratification. It's gratification or the highway. But the highway is not a happy highway if there's no immersion of one's exploration of one's mind.
Well, you know, I'm going to say, I met Dr. Tyson DeGrasse, Neil Tyson DeGrasse. He works at the Museum of Natural History, and I was on a train one morning, and he was sitting across from me on the C train many years ago. And I got up, I was like, this guy's on the train with us. And I got up, and I sat next to him, and he began to talk to me. You know, I was afraid, but I said, I'm going to just take, you know, go for it. And he's a really approachable individual. First, let me say that about him. And he also is very, very, he has a depth of knowledge of so many different things. It's just mind-blowing. We talked about religion, because, I mean, that's always my interest. And he said, I'm a Christian, and I said, what are your thoughts about religion? He's talking about, you know, creation is about cosmos and, you know, the string theory.
Right.
He says, you're a Christian. He said, you believe in Jesus Christ. Well, yes. He goes, well, if you believe in this thing, then you're an atheist to a Muslim, or you're an atheist to a Jew, or you're an atheist to an Islam. In other words, your belief in one thing means that you don't hold the same belief as somebody else, so they can say the same about you. So what's right and what's wrong? Mm-hmm. And I thought it was very interesting. We had a longer conversation, but just to get back to the point. Another gentleman mentioned what Tyson Brett mentioned also. His name is Jordan Peterson. And there's a website. Listen to Mr. Peterson speak, who was a very eloquent psychologist and he's a deep thinker. And he talked about this program on OpenAI. You mentioned about this program. You can tell it what you want it to type, and it will do anything you want it to do. Any dissertation, you can combine the Bible with literature with the Bible. I mean, anything. And in literally minutes, it will spit out a paper that rivals any legitimate book that's on the market, which obviously now the kids are aware of, and so they won't have a desire to go deeper. You know, we already had Cliff's Notes, and we already have Google, which made it later.
Right.
During my time, that was one stab in the cough. But then you have, when we were kids, when we were coming up, you had to read the book. You had to do a bibliography. You had to give points and facts. You had to give, you know, each chapter. So you had to know the book. You had to actually read the book. And the teacher would know if you read the book or not. And so now, you know, the computer is so vast that it can give you something that will get you a C or B minus or even a, you know, whatever, and you escape by. But here's the point. The point is that they don't really want the kids to be free. They want kids to be reaction. They want young people to be reaction. Because you can't control a free thinker. You can't control a deep thinker. You can't control a critical thinker. You can only control the thinker that is not thinking, who thinks he or she is thinking, but is really being told what to do. So in light of that, don't try this to be a mistake. It's about making money. It's about producing faster, but it's not producing safer. Like Dennis said, everything that's change doesn't mean it's a good change. It's just a change. People, you know, if you go to the doctor and say you have a change in your health, you want to hear a positive change. You don't want to hear a negative change. And sometimes the change that occurs, it's not openly obvious. It takes time for to see the destructive nature of what was presented. But if you can coach people to be lazy, and you can continue to spoon feed them ways to stay lazy, then they have no desire to be anything different. And then quite naturally, what will happen is they'll believe that this is the natural way it's supposed to be. So they won't see anything wrong with it. It goes, and I'm just going to say this, it goes to gender teaching in school, or whatever it might, you know, say a boy is not a boy and a girl is not a girl, you know, and all these different things. And, you know, nobody cares to police what people want to do in their private lives. I mean, everyone has the right to live to the best of their ability and do what they want. But when you make it so that you take the truth of nature to say that nature is wrong, that's like saying God is wrong. Because God created all things. So to change the nature of people in their psychology to say that God made a mistake with Eve when he did this, because in the Torah it says he created Adam, he created Eve, and this is what he created. Now, if it was something in the Torah that spoke differently about that in the Bible, then we would know it's there. You know, you have scholars for thousands of years who studied this, so there's no indication that what God has said is wrong. So what society is doing now is ushering another belief, another standard, another thing that for the kids coming up won't know the truth. They won't know. The truth will be what they're being taught now. So as a parent, or as someone is, you know, is your uncle or grandparent, what do you do when your grandchild, you know, comes home and they can't read or write? They're not really interested in things that got us to the point where we are proficient because of how we were taught. When I was in school in Crown Heights, most of my teachers were Jewish. I can go first grade, Miss Gallup, second grade, Miss Rubenstein, third grade, Mr. Sherman. We're at fourth grade, Mrs. Asher, fifth grade, Mr. Luca Damo, sixth grade, Miss Iman. I can name them all. They were amazing teachers. I still remember them. So you took a reading test, and it wasn't just to take a test. It was to see really if they cared, if you could really read and write and do math. And
right.
It's gone. That's gone. So these programs are destructive. And Albert Einstein said that technology, I'm paraphrasing, would be the destruction of mankind. Yes, he says in some sense that the likelihood that all the easy routes lead to destruction. They don't. In the Bible, does it? Yeah. So that's all.
I just want to make one comment. Thank you, Rob. Is that I do disagree with, I guess you call him Dr. Tyson? I called him Dyson before. Tyson. I should remember Tyson.
Oh, no, not Dr. Tyson. He's not a doctor. No, he did,
okay, I mean a PhD, I meant, like a PhD in astrophysics. But anyway, okay, so anyway, he's extremely intelligent. The point is, I don't agree that he said that if you believe in the Christian Messiah, then a Jew, I'll speak for Jewish people, I mean, I'm not the leader, but I'm saying you're not an atheist for being in the Christian Messiah. In fact, our system, according to Rambam, would say, if that's your system, that's your system. So that I will disagree upon. Making a Christian who believes in the Christian viewpoint or a Muslim who believes in the Islamic viewpoint does not make them an atheist according to a Jewish person, according to Torah teachings. I just want to clarify that. In fact,
okay.
The Rambam...
Well, that's refreshing.
Okay, well, that's clear. Rambam is very clear in the summarization of the his Mishnah Torah that Christianity and Islam are preparing the world for the redemption, you know, because it's educating people. But there is an idea of a messianic figure, a human being, that will come and will upflip the condition of human, or I call the human family condition, by teachings of Torah. Rob, now we're going to go into more pleasant, more talking about education. You have on your hand, I believe in your hands right now, a book that I think was won an award, a child's book, What Mama Says?
Yes, a children's book. Wrote it several years ago under the classic books. I have two books published, Once Upon a Cloud, and the second book is called Mama Says.
Can you talk about what inspired to write that, and then read a couple pages to give our readers around the world an idea of what should be taught little children, as opposed to the over-sexualization? Unfortunately, it's a very painful subject matter. I've been watching videos, and what little children are being exposed to in public schools is absolutely criminal, to get their minds thinking about things which they don't have to think about really until they hit puberty or pre-puberty age, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 plus years old. I myself didn't have any sexual education classes. I was 16 years old. Of course, you know, growing up as I did in a non-observant family, a person heard and learned about these things from the streets and from friends. But it would be very refreshing, Rob, if you can talk about what inspired you to talk, write What Mama Says, and then maybe read a page or two or even three, and then let Dennis chime in on the work.
Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity, Don. This book, Mama Says, A Book of Love for Mothers and Sons. Mama Says, A Book of Love for Mothers and Sons. It was written in 2010, I believe, and then, you know, released. So this book is inspired by the teachings of my mother and my grandmother and all the wonderful things that they told me growing up, you know, and I put it in poetic context. And just all of the teachings about what it meant to be a good person, an understanding person, what it meant to be civil, be loving, giving, kind, to respect God, respect family, respect society, respect nature. So, you know, I'm raised in a single-parent home, you know, after the age of 10 or 11, and my grandmother and my grandfather, let me give them credit as well, really ushered me into adulthood. My mother and my grandmother were the two figures. They were the two pillars that really got me, you know, past times in my life. And so this book is a tribute to them because, you know, my grandmother, who was very kind, and I could do no wrong for her, you know, I learned after my grandmother passed away that I was actually born on her wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And so, I was born in, we were both born in November. I was born on her wedding anniversary. It was amazing. So she always treated me special. My mom was very tough. My mom didn't treat me like I was, you know, over five. So she had to be tough. She had to be straight. But, you know, as I said, I grew up in Crown Heights, which is a much different neighborhood now than it was when I grew up. And, you know, this is the 70s and the 80s when, you know, drugs were on the scene, crack was on the scene, and, you know, people were losing their kids to the streets. And, they, you know, as we still are, but it was just in a different way. And so this book, when I wrote it so many years later, really made me, you know, that my heart was full of all the things and the gratitude that I had for my grandmother and my mother, and for women in general. And all the, and so before I read the pages, I want to say this, but Scholastic came to me and said, well, you know, Rob, how do you want this book illustrated? You know, you're a black author, and, you know, I know you want to do something for the community. I said, the best thing I can do for my community is have this book illustrated as a multicultural book. I want mothers of all diasporas and all cultures to be represented in this book. I said, I don't want to be known as just an author, or a black author, because, you know, that kind of diminishes who I am as a spirit. I want mothers to be recognized, and I want it to give them tribute. So if anyone is going to buy this book, it's on Amazon for sale, and I'm in the process now of actually reprinting. I got the rights to the book back from Scholastic, so I'm going to be reprinting it now. I'm in that process, and then it'll be available soon. And on my Instagram page, which is Rob Wolf Studio, Instagram, there are a few pages that I put up. You can look at it, and I'll more to the program, so you guys see the beautiful illustration. And last point is that the book is illustrated for mothers of every culture, and also every language is represented. So if it's a Jewish mother, you'll see the English, and then you'll see the Hebrew. If it's a Cherokee mother, you'll see the English, and you'll see the, you know, the Native American, Dutch, Asian, whatever it might be. So it's a translation. So it's really beautifully done by Leo and Diane Dillon, and Mr. Dillon, who passed away years ago, his wife, and they were interracial. You know, it's a very beautiful mix of energy in this. So without further ado, I'm going to read you a few pages.
Okay. Mama and Dennis, I'd like you to chime in for feedback.
Mama says a book of love for mothers. Okay. Mama says be good. Mama says be kind. Mama says the rain will come, but still the sun will shine. Mama says be loving. Mama says be caring. Mama says you've done God's will every time you're sharing. Mama says be strong. Mama says be bright. Mama says sometimes hard work may keep you up at night. Mama says be honest. Mama says be true. Mama says to put my heart in everything I do. Mama says sometimes I cry. Mama says release. Mama says that happiness comes from inner peace. Mama says have faith. Mama says believe. Mama says to trust in God and let God take the lead. Mama says to be on time. Mama says be neat. Mama says to walk with pride and never drag my feet. Mama says have courage, although I may be scared. Mama says to walk with care and I will be prepared. Mama says to embrace the moon and marvel at the sun. Mama says to study stars and make a wish on one. Mama says respect all life and treasure every tree. Mama says our planet needs each flower, bird, and bee. And I won't give you the ending of the book. I'm going to save it if you buy it. But you can see all the what I read, all the beautiful lessons.
Dennis,
thank
feedback.
My mom and my grandma.
Well,
thank you, Rob.
Traditionally, all the human children are dependent on their parents. And the parents are considered good people because they don't teach bad, so to speak. So we're very dependent on our first input that we absorb as to what our body of knowledge is. So we're dependent on our parents to show us the way. That doesn't mean they show you 100%, but they at least set you off in the right direction. And they give you some understanding, and they lead you to where you can find further information. So we don't depend on one individual all the time because that individual may not be present with us all the time. But when we're young children, yes, to a certain extent. So we learn about the world from our parents. So we're dependent on that. So, yes, the book sounds good, but the emphasis is on the female side. Now, I don't have any problem with that, but there's also a father side that has to be played into the fabric of the knowledge of the children. Because if they don't get, and we don't want them to think that there's only one place that you can get knowledge that you can use for the future. No. Believe in your parents. They will show you the way.
Beautiful. Rob, any response? And maybe a future book where, you know, since you are a father married and you have children. Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, as you know, to Dennis's point, and I agree, obviously I've had some beautiful male figures in my life, again, of different cultures, of different, you know, from different points of view. This book was written as a tribute, as you write with anything. If you grew up in a home with dogs and you want to contribute to, you know, I mean, I think that this is a perspective book. I think that, of course, I can give, you know, Papa says, I can do Mama says, I can do Grandma says. This is what inspired this particular thing. Inspired a movie or a novel or any point of view is the experience that I've had. And I think that's what I was getting at when I wrote the book at that time, to share my love and adoration from others, but never to remove the power and usefulness of the father, that I am one. I'm a father of grandfather. So I can't remove my contribution. And of course, I wouldn't diminish it in any respect. But, you know, I just want this, I wanted just to highlight the value of women in a way that I think sometimes society just fails to do accurately. And I think that, yeah, men are given lots of credit for things that they do. And, of course, we were all carried for 9 months in the womb of a woman, and we were nurtured by a woman in many respects. And I think what, as to Don's point earlier about emotional intelligence, in a sense, I think a lot of fathers will teach their sons to play sports, to be tough, and you can't cry. And what you're crying for? And if you you got to be a man. Well, a man can cry, and a man can be soft, and a man can be compassionate. And I think if we were more compassionate, we would not pick up guns and shoot each other. I think if we were more compassionate, we wouldn't hurt each other. If we were more compassionate. There has to be a duality in how we look at things and how we respect out of ourselves. It's not feminine to care. It's not feminine to love, although that's an attribute of what women obviously harness most of all, and without which the planet would be completely destroyed. So it was all about giving tribute to that. But to your point, lastly, Dennis, I get it. But most kids, unfortunately, in the African American community, from what I see statistically, and for white communities and other communities, they're raised in single parent homes. So it is what the truth of what life is that a lot of women are raising children without men, and that's the reality. And we, like most other things, we shy away from not being putting things out there until it's far too late, too far gone in terms of teaching sexual education to kindergartners when they watch Big Bird and playing with their toys. You're talking about sex education and gender equality and stuff when they have no understanding of what you're talking about. They can't relate to it because their bodies and their minds are not there yet. It's the equivalent of telling a man to go to the military at 18, but he can't have a drink until he's 21. So he's old enough to kill a person with a rifle, but he's not old enough to have a drink. Our society has got things a little bit twisted in a way where we don't really want to address it because we think, well, it'll make us an outcast. But if you follow God, you're going to be an outcast. If you're righteous, in some respect, you're going to have people come up against you. So the truth must always agree with what you said.
Abraham would definitely testify on your behalf that when you stand up for the truth, the people will contest you. And Isaac and Jacob and those that followed in their ways, for sure. For sure.
Yes.
Gentlemen, I'd like to move to the final segment, which is basically the reason why we're doing this program in essence. But to get to that essence, we had to go through a lot of dialogue, which I think is so important to give us a better appreciation for the essence of today's program, is sharing a couple verses from Proverbs. Now, last week I read some verses, so for Dennis and Rob and Dennis, this is my team, I skipped some, but I didn't. Just last week I was unable to contact either one of you to get you on the program successfully. So we're going to start with chapter 1, verse 20 from Proverbs. Wisdom shout in the street, in the square, she gives forth her voice. Now, what are the wisdoms? These are the wisdoms of the Torah cry out in her street to admonish people to turn to them, meaning there is a natural flow of godly information that is accessible to people. Now, sometimes people don't have the means by which, because they've never learned these matters, they've never learned related theologies. I mean, again, it's not a diminishment of Christianity or Islam, but a lot of the wisdoms of Torah have filtered through those other two faiths. I mean, they acknowledge it to some extent. And in the squares, which was mentioned in this verse, that where Torah is studied intensively, scripturally, and the oral Torah, elaborations, but Torah should be taught in public, meaning the talk of the town, the talk in the streets, the talk in the squares, and Crown Heights, especially on Saturday, there are people getting up on podiums with microphones, teaching about, I haven't heard so much Islamic teachings, as much as Christian teachings in the Jewish congregations, we're talking about it. When we leave our congregations, we talk about it. So how can we get people, Dennis, to realize godly knowledge is flowing all over the place, but how you access it will be your choice. And if you want, reach out to someone to maybe share your interpretations or get their interpretations so that it becomes more of a common chat as opposed to the polemic discussions that we're having too much in this society and around the world for that matter.
You must use what you have. And what you have is your mind. You can try to understand, but you must be a little skeptical and you must ask tons of questions. If you don't ask enough questions, you may not understand.
Rob, you mentioned you grew up in Concord Heights, right around the corner from where I am. I'm on the corner of Sterling and Utica, and I think you said Park Place, which I know is very close. It's the next street over, going northernly. And you grew up in what you would call a village. Were the, what was there biblical talk or other faith-based ideas circulating amongst the villagers at that time?
Honestly, no. I mean, not in any deep respect. I think that, you know, people naturally assumed that, you know, people went to church on Sunday, they were Christian. They didn't simply look at Baptist or Presbyterian or whatever the other denominations it might be. By and large, you know, it was just an assumption. And to that end of it, my particular block, Italian on my block, Latino on my block, Black on the block, it was mixed. And then if I ventured a place to park where this community, you know, or closer to Kingston Avenue and stuff. So, but it wasn't a heavy religious discussion, you know, from what I understand. I think it was more of just people getting along and people loving and respecting each other. I didn't hear much religious teaching growing up, you know, from anybody personally, and certainly not in my family today.
But you've had that experience, Rob, like last summer when I merited to give you the book, The Gator Trust, and then you joined in a conversation with other Jewish gentlemen, and on the streets of where you live in another part of Brooklyn, the wisdoms of Torah are being exchanged between you. Maybe I think we've talked about it in a previous radio show, and I'm really we're coming to the end of the program, but I think it's very important that you share this experience once again, even at the expense of us not sharing another verse from Proverbs. Hopefully next Sunday we can rejoin all of us. Talk about that briefly, Rob, about how wisdoms were being exchanged, not unknowns to you and this other Jewish gentleman, but it was a brotherly exchange, and he was affirming your receiving of the book.
Yeah, like I said, I had the book in my hand, and you know, a friend of mine had given it to me, and then he was coming around the corner, and he in his car, and he was talking, you know, pulled over, we were talking, and he basically said, "This is a very powerful book, and the person that gave it to you really wants you to understand and, you know, respect you." And he says, you know, he studied the book and had some really powerful teaching and some really in-depth understandings. And in my experience so far reading the book and going through it, it is like this with the Bible, this with the Torah, is a key. It will unlock tons of information, and it just deals with the profound truth that if you love God, you have to trust God. And I mean, what he was saying to me, the gentleman that I spoke to, was that he going through something with, he's a real estate guy, and he was to buy a home or a property, and he was going back and forth. But in the end, God furnished him with what he trusted God to give to him. And it didn't require the person that was going to lend him the money to give it to them, because God furnished him based on his level of trust. And I can say soundly that this book, The Gate of Trust, is a beautiful school teaching instrument and tool in the hands of a mind that is focused on God and a heart that's focused on trusting God. The Rebbe said in a video that I watched, he said, it's one thing to believe God, but it's another thing to trust him. To believe, of course we all believe him, but to trust him is something completely different. And the reason we don't get the results we want most times is because we think that belief is trust. I watched a video the other day, Don, I think I might have mentioned it to you, and the gentleman said, you have to have that blind, unshakable trust in God that no matter what's happening, as with Obadiah, no matter what happened in his life, he knew that it was for his good, that God set this up for a particular reason, at a particular season, at a particular time, that it was going to all make sense in the end. It is not that we need to understand everything God is doing and question God every step of the way. We just have to say, you know what, God, you created the universe way before I got here. This has been going on. You know why I'm here. You know what the circumstances are. You're aware of stuff. I said to you yesterday, there are two things God does. God will either make something happen or allow it to happen. Either way, he's involved in both. He's aware of both things. Either to make it happen or allow it to happen. So when you trust him, you're saying, God, I don't have the wisdom, understanding, or the time on my side to even question you, as Job understood. So this book, back to the book, Gate of Trust, this is a powerful teaching tool. And if anyone wants to learn and really understand Torah teaching and understand how God operates, this is the perfect book to get.
Thank you, Rob. And again, not only was the wisdom of Torah in the streets, you and this gentleman were elevating the streets in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Dennis,
yeah.
trust, belief, you know, any final words about that, you know, in terms of efforts?
What happens is when we're kids and we're growing up, the underlying question is, why are they different? If you ignore the answer to that question, you're excluding your mind from a piece of knowledge. And that is that it will help you to understand other people. Why? Because they may have different hopes, beliefs, but in the final thing is that we're all human and we all want to know, why are they different? You must answer the question or find out some of the answers.
Beautiful. And with that being said, gentlemen, fortunately, but unfortunately as well, we'll have to conclude at this point. We're going to segue off in a moment with a very interesting song. I'd like to thank our Rambam student teacher and advocate and an activist, Dennis Ryan. You should go from strength to strength in all matters of physicality and spirituality, and our excellent dude from Brooklyn, Rob Walker. Hopefully we'll read some more on What Mama Says, and hopefully in coming broadcasts from his other book, and hopefully his book will spread like hotcakes. It should sell more books than a McDonald's hamburger in a peaceful, pleasant way. And but I just want to thank you both for coming on today, and I want to segue off with a very interesting song, a song by an artist who influenced me, because he is so sharp, sharper than a razor. His name is Linton Kwesi Johnson. He's originally from Jamaica, and he moved to England. And if you ever listen to him on an interview, it's very worth your while, because he talks about growing up in England and how, you know, someone coming from the Caribbean thought that, you know, the streets of England would be paved with gold, like people coming from Europe thought that the streets of America were paved with gold. Lo and behold, it wasn't such like that. In particular, I just want to point out there's an interview with him with Dr. Emily Zobel Marshall. But I'm going to end off with a song. He's a poet who is able to combine the sweet music of reggae music with his poetic brilliance. And this song is about more time. And when you listen to the words, Blessed Souls, we need more time for the matter that Linton Kwesi Johnson chants about. And may this all be accomplished in the way of a Hava Chad, one love, Goral Chad, one destiny, Kulano for all of us, but Darkinam Darkisham, a pleasant, peaceful way. And I want to remind everyone that you have a divine image will help you get in scrimmage. And it is no dream, your Tzelem Elohim, to be a good steward of others. All 8 billion plus. And there's 8 billion plus human beings of the human family condition. It is ample testimony. We don't need any plans for eugenics. We need for people to think about how to provide more time for people to get involved in activities like Linton Kwesi Johnson is going to sing about. Take care, everyone, and hopefully we'll reunite next week.
Do svidaniya.
Bless you.
Marching out the old towards the new century, armed with the new technology. We're getting more and more productivity. Some of the things looking up to prosperity. But if everyone won't get a share this time, well, mentality must get left behind. We want the shorter working day, give us the shorter working week. Longer holiday, we need decency. More time for leisure, more time for pleasure, more time for edification, more time for recreation, more time for contemplate, more time for ruminate, more time for relate, more time. We need more time, give we more time. A full time, them abolish unemployment and revolutionize labor deployment. A full time, them banish overtime. Make everybody get a work this time. We need a higher quality of liberty. We need it now and for everybody. We want the shorter working year. Give us the shorter working life. More time for the husband. More time for the wife. More time for the children. More time for your friends. More time to meditate. More time to create. More time to live it. More time for life. More time. We need more time. Give it more time. Thank you. out the old towards the new century, armed with the new technology. We're getting more and more productivity. Some of the things looking up the prosperity. But if everyone won't get a share this time, old mentality must get left behind. We want the shorter working day. We want the shorter working week. Longer holiday. We need peace and peace. More time to leisure. More time to pleasure. More time to edification. More time to recreation. More time to contemplate. More time to ruminate. More time to relate. More time. We need more time. Give me more time. A full time them abolish unemployment and revolutionize labor deployment. A full time them banish overtime. Make everybody get a work this time. We need a higher quality of liberty. We need it now and for everybody. We want the shorter working year. Give it the shorter working life. More time for the husband. More time for the wife. More time for the children. More time for your friends. More time to meditate. More time to create. More time to live it. More time to life. More time. We need more time. Give it more time.